It's time for the John Chuckery Show, serving you up sports on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
From the Mobile Kia Studios in Midtown Atlanta, Willie P is in the building. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and the radio.com app. In for the vacationing John Chuckery tonight. Hope you're enjoying yourself on this Friday, the 26th of July, 2020. I have to tell you, when I got this assignment a couple of weeks ago, as John takes a couple of very well-deserved days of R&R, I have to tell you, I was very excited because the tenor of where everything was at that time was very positive. Things were opening back up. We were going out and doing things. I think 2 weekends ago, I was here in Midtown, and we actually went out, my girlfriend and I, to brunch. It was the first time we had eaten out at a restaurant together since before the pandemic, because we both have been taking the utmost precautions in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. And yet ever since then, all the news has seemed to turn. You hear all the stuff that's come out over the last couple of days, Florida, Texas, our mayor, Keisha Bottom, saying that we set a record a couple of days ago for tests that were positive. I know that the death numbers are good, but with the positive tests going up, that's not something you want to see. And people are going back on some of their particulars when it comes to what they want to close and what they want to let happen as far as social distancing. And how does that affect our sports? That's really the intersection of where I want to begin and kind of the state of where we are. Because while it's all very well and good, that it seems like, and again, science permitting and world permitting and factors that are beyond yours or my control permitting, we are going to get some sort of sporting stuff back. We've gotten already some stuff back, NASCAR, the golf, the international soccer. We're going to get MLS back here 2 weeks from tomorrow with Atlanta United. We still don't know if the plans laid forth by Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NFL and college football, and to a lesser extent the NHL, if those all are going to go off without a hitch. I think there was a lot of optimism, like I said, about 2 weeks ago. You hear Adam Silver speak today, it's a little less optimistic, especially when you think about the hub city that they have right now, Orlando, going through a bit of a turmoil when it comes to their tests. You hear Buster Olney speaking on Dukes and Bell a couple of hours ago saying, be honest, guys, it's kind of a mess. And this was something that I was talking about with my colleagues Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson on the Batter Up podcast, which, of course, covers the Atlanta Braves, and we'll have a lot more baseball to talk about here, hopefully, in the coming weeks as we get ramped up for spring training 2.0 and the actual start of a 60-game season here in 3 weeks. But I said that with all this belly aching back and forth about the financials, I really hope that the wording and the policies and all the stuff that revolves around the health and safety of not only the players, but those who come in contact with the players, I just hope all that stuff doesn't get kind of fudged and put near the end. Because that's the part of it that I'm more worried about than any money that goes inside the pocket of the players. And I know the money in the pocket of the players is what actually makes the season happen, but truth be told, this is more of the problem. This is why we're not playing. We weren't playing because they couldn't agree to a money. The whole reason that we aren't having sports right now is because we have a virus. The virus isn't gone. And I'll tell you right now, I'm ticked off. I'm ticked off about us having to kind of scale things back. I've worn my mask. I will be sitting here and telling a lie to you if I wasn't wearing it all the time. But I think for the most part, you know, even to go get the mail, go get my Starbucks in the morning, I was wearing it. But if I'm going to sit here and tell you that if I'm sitting by the pool enjoying a cold beverage, am I wearing a mask? No. So it's up to us to be a little bit more diligent. It's up to us to be a little bit more responsible. And I think it's up to us as well to kind of police each other. And that's something that Buster Olney said is going to be the case for baseball, is that those guys kind of have to police each other. But as we sit We're going to get the NBA schedule here in mere moments. ESPN's having their scheduled show. We'll give you any updates. Of course, you know the Atlanta Hawks are not a part of that schedule and a part of that bubble. And I do like, and Steve Koonin spoke to this, and a couple of others have also kind of chimed in. I do like that they are going to try and get something together for the Hawks, because I feel like they were robbed of some real inclusionary activities that could have put them in a position to solidify that young core. I know this offseason is very big for the Hawks, especially when you think about John Collins and the negotiations that will take place involving him and anything that they could possibly do to fortify this team. I know the name Davis Bertans has been brought up. Bertans not going to the coronavirus bubble in Orlando, so that's something that's very intriguing for Hawks fans. And then when you think about Major League Baseball, look, this is a scenario when it comes to Atlanta where I've said very, very candidly that I believe they can be very advantageous with the way that they build their roster. If you think about and go back in time to when we were when the thing stopped in March, the Braves themselves were dealing with a couple of very key position battles, one at third base, one in the rotation, and they were also trying to define the roles of a much more stacked bullpen than we were talking about at this time last year or even last July before the trade deadline. And to the credit of President and GM Alex Anthopoulos, they've totally reformed that entire deal. So because of that, I look at them and I say, okay, you've got probably more starters on your side than most teams would be able to throw out there at any point in time. And that's why I was very curious and happy that Alex Anthopoulos took the position that he did on his conference call with reporters on Wednesday. You'll hear a little bit of that later on in the program. We're also going to talk to Bob Nightingale at 7:40 about not only the Braves, but how baseball is playing through this whole mess. He's brought to you, of course, as a Radio.com Sports MLB Insider by Dell Technologies' Small Business Podference podcast series, available on radio.com/Dell. But when AA spoke, he said, look, first 10 days, first couple times of the rotation, we have a 30-man roster. We're going to use it to our advantage, and we're going to try and back some guys up early on and not have starters go more than maybe two or three, maybe four innings second time through, and then back them up with a guy like a Sean Newcomb or a Kyle Wright, maybe Touki Toussaint, runs into that mix. And that particularly, when it comes to the Braves, I'd rather have those guys. I personally would think that if you look at that and you look at the way that they structure their roster and the way that they have certain things built in their fashion, I'd take that over anybody else in the NL East, knowing what I know about the depths of the pitching rotations for teams like the Nationals, Phillies, and Mets, and we're discounting the Marlins completely because they're the Marlins. But even the Mets are a team that's without one of their best starters in Noah Syndergaard. The Phillies don't have nearly the pitching, and of course they play in a bandbox. And the Nationals, while they have a pretty good 1-2 punch of Scherzer and Strasburg, that's going to be neutralized early on because you would think that those guys aren't stretched out just yet. And you think about the Universal DH, how that fits in to the standpoint of where the Braves are. You had Austin Riley and Johan Camargo battling for that third base spot. I think ideally you'd want Camargo in the field with his ability to defend. We haven't seen Austin Riley over the course of a long season defend there, at least at the big league level. So I think, if anything, for a guy who hit a wall in his rookie season, putting less on his plate is probably best. But you still want to try and do something to forward his development, so you do want to give him his reps in the field. I do think the DH could be a big weapon for a guy like an Adam Duvall or a guy like Nick Markakis on this roster, because both those guys are pushed out of the lineup by a guy like Marcell Ozuna. So when you think about the Braves and where they sit with a 30-man roster the first 2 weeks, 28 the next two, and then 26 the rest of the way, I think if you get to the end of July or end of August, somewhere around that time, and you get to that point where the roster's down to 26, you might have 20 wins. And because of that, they're going to draw the envy of most of the teams in baseball. And I also found it very curious to what Alex Anthopoulos said as well, when he said that, you know, maybe these are going to be times where they wouldn't be afraid to add at the trade deadline. We were talking about this also, about how, you know, it might be the least trafficked trade deadline in Major League Baseball history because of the fact that teams aren't going to necessarily want to add assets for a particular push. Anthopoulos said, no, we want to win. And to Tyler Flowers' point, he spoke on a Zoom call today, which you'll hear a little bit of. He said that, you know, that champagne is going to taste the same one way or the other. And so because of that, I do think that it's going to be very, very interesting to see how these teams structure themselves. Of course, MLS playing 2 weeks from tomorrow for Atlanta United. The entire tournament starts a couple weeks from Wednesday. And I'm very intrigued and excited about one thing in particular with that whole setup, not just from how they're going to play it, but how it's going to be marketed to the masses, because you're going to get a lot of eyeballs on the MLS that don't normally get seen. Of course, we here, we take it very seriously. We are probably, and I would go on a limb to say this, we're probably one of the markets that talks MLS the most here, and we do that because of the interest in the product, and we've got numbers to back up why we do that. But I also feel like you are going to have the MLS in cities like ours where it's a direct competitor with baseball. And I think, and I'll speak to this a little bit later on in the program, I think that baseball made a significant error in calculating where they were in the sports world. There's a significant downturn happening with baseball and a significant uptick in where the MLS is and who it's grabbing the attention of. I even wrote a piece about this, or spoke to this a couple of months ago on 92.9 The Game, and wrote about it at 92.9thegame.com as well. And it was based off of a piece that ran at the end of the baseball season last year that had to do with the lack of a crossover between the fans in this city who root for the Braves and the fans in this city who root for the Atlanta United. And because of that, I do believe that you might get some people who, dare I say, cross the Cobb County line and come down to Atlanta and maybe embrace this soccer franchise even more. And so because of that, I do believe that you're going to see a lot of difference when you see, you know, people who are embracing this team coming in the next couple of months, especially when you think about the fact that they get a whole month head start when it comes to just being able to consume this in a way they might not have before. 404-741-0929 is how you get in touch with me, Willie P. That's not only the number, but also the Solomon Brothers time and text line, at Willie P. Style on Twitter as well. As I mentioned, Bob Nightingale is going to join us, talk a little baseball with us coming up at 7:40. Jason Longshore is going to join me top of the third hour of the program, 9 p.m., our Atlanta United analyst. What does the schedule look like for United? They're going to play three real tough games. And really, when you think about the fact that they'd already played one of the teams in the preseason, and the New York Red Bulls already have a regular season win over their second opponent, FC Cincinnati, that's something you have to take on as well. And then, of course, the tough concluding game against the Columbus Crew. I also want to talk about, just from an NFL standpoint, how are the Falcons going to be evaluated? Will there be a difference in evaluating this season in terms of how Dan Quinn, Thomas Dimitroff, and all the principal people who were involved in a very key season for themselves, how will they be judged off of this year? Because if you think about it, while we haven't had any particular reductions in the season as of yet, there are certainly some reductions in terms of the preparations for the season. You're going to have a much later start in terms of OTAs and things of that nature, and you're also going to have a much later start when it comes to the way that you structure your offseason and train some of these younger players. You're going to need to make very key impacts in a vital season for those guys. Will that affect the particular evaluation of Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff in a year where many think playoffs are bust or playoffs or pink slip? 404-741-0929. Of course, at Willie P Style on Twitter. In for the vacationing John Chuckery from the Mobile Kia Studios. Hope you're having yourself a good Friday night. Willie P is in a building. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and wherever you might be listening via the radio.com app on your smart speakers and smartphones.
You know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you're going to go.
Willie P is in the building. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, radio.com app. I forgot to shout him out in the open. No Jarvis Davis tonight. Jarvis was up on the afternoon show today. He'll be back on Monday. Marshall Parker is in Jarvis Davis' seat. I would say on the other side of the glass, but in reality, he is about a mile and a half away from me, just up Peachtree. See, that's the very weird thing about this. The office is very, again, centrally located here for people who come, but when you think about most... So, for me, it's a walk, and I had been doing some of my shows since the pandemic at the studios with the permission of the high and mighty over there, but because of the recent spike in tests, I thought, you know what, I'll give Marshall a break and make sure that we are staying safe and limit the amount of people who are in the building, but is nice. The only problem, that the trappings that I fall into while I'm home, is that I keep a 2 liter of Coke Zero at my feet at all times. So that is something that's different than being in the Kia Studios in Midtown, because we don't drink or eat inside the studio. And there's an unlimited amount of snacks that I can just get at any particular time. So, like, I got pimento cheese in the fridge. I got salsa and chips. I got stuff to cook for the weekend. I'm going to gain like 20 pounds by the time John Chuckery's vacation's over. So because of that, I'm hoping that I can use some restraint. Again, at Willie P Style on Twitter, that's IEP Style. And also 404-741-0929. Be sure to chime in on what we have for you here on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Bob Nightingale is going to join us about 50 minutes time. But before we talk to him, we'll tell you what's happening.
They tell everybody that July 28th is the date they're going to...
He played the sound clip. What it means to actually have him play the the bed that I have for what's happening. But that's
what's,
okay.
What's happening?
Thank you, Marshall. It's all good. Was able to make that happen very quickly, I might add. Marshall Parker, again, back in the studios, helping us out. This is what Buster Olney had to say with regards to the things happening inside baseball, on how difficult this whole scenario is going to be to pull off when it comes to these 60 games in 66 days. And oh, by the way, we got to keep everybody healthy. It's very difficult when you think about all the logistics that come in place. And one thing that he also said that I found very interesting is that they're going to have to police themselves. Like, there's going to be somewhat of a, I don't want to say kangaroo court, but when you look at the way that the veterans kind of had to take charge and kind of police some of the younger players, that's going to be a very difficult thing to play forward when it comes to the way that those things happen.
I'm hearing at ground level that they think it is a mess. I think it's probably the least surprising development of all for people in baseball, that there is, early on, kind of a split among the players that's being sensed that we see in the country, where some people are all in and, you know, let's do everything we can, social distancing, wear masks, and other players have a different perspective, and they aren't as worried. And I got to tell you, you really feel like if you're going to have a chance to pull this off, you have to have everybody pulling on the rope in the same direction. And early on, that is not the case.
That's Buster Olney. He was on with Dukes and Bell again a couple hours ago. The one thing that I was shocked, and again, the NBA is doing this via quarantine in a bubble. MLS is doing the same thing. I wondered how teams were going to go about, I don't want to say quarantining their players, but how they were going to go about policing them when they're in their home markets. Alex Anthopoulos did a media conference call with us on Wednesday, said they're actually going to let the players kind of police themselves.
They can go home. Now, I would expect some would stay in a hotel and some will have apartments. Some already have homes in Atlanta. So there'll be very, very thorough screening process when they come in daily. There'll obviously be a lot of test testing done as well. But, you know, when they're in Atlanta, they're free to live where they want to.
And I'm not necessarily sure I like that. Not that I don't think these guys aren't adults, but we've seen what happens, right? I mean, we've seen what's happened when it comes to getting a little bit of freedom. We get an inch, we try to take a yard, and then we're back in a situation where, you know, bars in Florida and Texas are having to be quarantined and shut down again. Players and personnel, again, this is via MLB, will be tested every other day. They'll get symptom checks and temperature checks twice per day. Players and personnel not participating in the games will sit in the stands at least 6 feet apart. Antibody testing will be conducted also once per month to see who ends up having the immunity to the virus. There will also be a COVID-19 related injury list, and any player who tests positive for COVID-19 won't be allowed to return until he tests negative twice. It was not too long ago that we were thinking that we might actually have a chance to see some fans inside the stands. Don't know if that's happening. That goes predominantly Major League Baseball, but NFL, college football, everybody. Matt Ryan was on Chris Long's podcast yesterday, and he spoke to the fact that there are some different things they have to take into effect if they don't have fans.
It's going to be a pain in the ass if there's no noise, is how often we're going to have to change audible words, code words, cadence. Because you talk about from the D-line perspective, you know, when you're playing at home in a place like Seattle, yeah, you're going to get five snaps a game where you're off the ball before the tackle's ready to go. But by the same token, if you're just getting into the rhythm of our cadence and listening to it over and over, you know, going against guys in practice, you get used to going against that same quarterback all the time, and you kind of get into how they sound.
That's a little bit from Matt Ryan. I didn't think about the fact that the cadences and things of that nature would be easy for the defenses to hear. I mean, I think that, and again, as somebody who's been on the field, I know the crowd noise has a significant effect, especially in college. You don't see that much in the NFL because you don't see people usually yelling at the vociferous level that you would hear at a, you know, place like either the Death Valleys or Sanford Stadium or something like that. Like, that's not something you'd look at and you'd say, oh my goodness, you'd have to overcome. But at least Matt Ryan thinks that that's something that they have to change. When it comes to the actual start of training camp, we did find out yesterday via the NFL's conference call with its owners.
Peter.
Looking at the way things work.
What's happening?
That they're going to have training camp starting on July 28th. This is Jay Glazer. Talked about things involving NFL training camp and the fact that they had a couple of different dates picked out.
They tell everybody that July 28th is the date they're going to come back. But there were other dates that were discussed beforehand, and they were going back and forth. And this is different territory. So some people are like, hey, let's go back July 15th and have like almost basically their OT time, OTA time. And somebody else, now let's do July 10th. And they can really have like somewhat of a week, basically, which is like your off-season workout program. Get them acclimated, get our systems down. And then they kind of get going back and forth on that. And then they just say, okay, let's do July 28th. So the good thing is that there's a lot of minds working on it. The bad thing is, again, because there's no answer that's going to satisfy everybody, it's, okay, which of these ideas can work the best and keep everybody the safest?
That's Jay Glazer of Fox Sports. Find out, of course, today that the NBA had its initial testing of COVID-19 players, or COVID-19 testing of players, I should say. 16 of the 302 players, that's about 5%, tested positive for COVID-19, but nobody has been hospitalized, which is a good thing. Adam Silver says that players will be tested daily. We just did get the full release of the NBA schedule. It begins on Thursday, July 30th, so a day earlier than we thought it was going to, and they're going to start with a TNT doubleheader. That's Utah and the New Orleans Pelicans, Clippers, and the Lakers. So you see Zion right off the bat, and you see LeBron and Kawhi right off the bat. So that's something that is very much a statement-type start for the NBA. And I think that Clipper-Laker game is basically going to serve as the makeup game from the game that was rescheduled off of the unfortunate death of Kobe Bryant, because remember, those two teams were supposed to play that first game at Staples Center, the first home game, and then they ended up postponing it. So that game will be played again on the 30th. And then there'll be a kind of triple header of sorts for the full slate on Friday with Memphis and Portland, Boston and Milwaukee, so you get to see Giannis, and then Houston and Dallas on the 31st. That's a triple header starting at 4 on NBA TV, and then the last two games on ESPN with a full slate of other games. And again, that will take place all the way through the 14th of August before they will start the postseason. One thing we're going to talk about later on in the program is your decision, your appetite, and kind of where your stomach is for hearing about COVID-19 tests with your favorite team, whether it's pro, college or pro. I did a Twitter poll earlier in the week, and I was very fascinated to see some of the responses and the percentage, and I'll share that with you later. I'll give you the juxtaposition. Georgia is not releasing COVID-19 positives or negatives. Roddy Nabolsi came on the Midday Show earlier this week, and he says he knows for a fact that there have been some positive tests. Didn't, of course, obviously reveal or know any of the names. I don't think the names necessarily are important at this time, but the fact that there are positive tests is something that we're just going to have to live with. Or you have a situation like Clemson on the other side of the transparency realm, and they are being very transparent to the point where, like, they're having bi-weekly updates, and they have shared with us today that another 14 positive tests have come inside their walls. Add that to the 23 that have already tested positive, and you have basically almost a third of their entire football team. They had about 120 on their roster, accounting for the scholarship and non-scholarship guys. About a third of their football team has tested positive for the virus. So that is something that's a tad disconcerting, and you wonder how that is going to be reacted to throughout the world of sports. From the SEC perspective, Commissioner Greg Sankey, speaking on Golic and Wingo this morning on ESPN Radio, says the one thing they have to think about is flexibility in terms of where the season starts and finishes.
My focus is on playing. I'm preparing to play the season as scheduled, but the circumstances around this virus are going to guide us in our decision. And that decision-making would contain all kinds of scenarios, that being one, that ability to have some flexibility on the end of our season. But it's not something that we've seen as important to activate or really communicate about, because there are well over a dozen, almost two dozen potential scenarios that we could draw out on a piece of paper for consideration.
That's Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, speaking of also the commissioners of regional import. Found out, it was either earlier today or earlier yesterday, that the commissioner of the Atlantic Coast Conference, John Swofford, will retire following this particular school year. So the fall and spring of 2021 will be his last go-around of it. He is somebody who really took that conference from the deathbed to being one of the top three preeminent conferences in the country, behind, I would say, the Big Ten and the SEC perspective there. But looked like they were going to be a loser when we talked about all that college realignment stuff about 15 years ago. They go and get Louisville. They sign a deal with Notre Dame, and they look a lot better. And they get Syracuse, too, out of the deal. I mean, they look a lot better out of that than I think many going into that whole space thought they would have, because they were looked at as mostly a basketball-only school. They've upped their football. Clemson's been a big part of that. And he was kind of the steward over that entire period of time. So he will retire again at the end of this year. What is baseball going to do over the course of the next couple of months to keep its players safe? And how will the game be consumed for you, the viewer? We'll try to get some of those answers with our Radio.com MLB insider, Bob Nightingale. He's been probably the most optimistic person when it comes to having baseball, especially throughout all those very big negotiations that took place. I'll ask him what drove him to that optimism next. Willie P is in the building, in for John Chuckery, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, and Radio.com.
I feel safest of all, I can lock all my doors. It's the only way to live in cars.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Willie P in for John Chuckery on this Friday evening. And I'm happy that at least we are talking about baseball being back. though the logistics of getting it back were complicated. Man who joins us now on the WaitForIt.com hotline is our Radio.com sports insider, Bob Nightingale. His appearance brought to you by Dell Technologies Small Business Podference podcast series, available on Radio.com/Dell. Bob, I know last time you and I talked, the future for baseball was bleak, but your optimism was there. Why was your optimism so high, even when it looked like baseball was in its darkest days?
Well, there was a situation, Willie, where both sides realized, hey, it would be, a death sentence. There was no baseball strictly because of financial reasons. You know, during the pandemic, what the country is going through. We're talking about, 42 million Americans unemployed, over 120,000 deaths. They had to play baseball. I think if they did not, strictly because of financial reasons, I think we're set to sport back a couple decades.
I don't disagree, and I think that was something, or a frame that I was always humping, even though, like I said, it looked bleak for a time. My only concern now, and again, obviously outside of the immediate stuff involving the actual virus, is what type of underbelly this sets for 2021, because now it seems like people kind of know where the factions are set right now. The battle stations are set. They're basically going to come back to the same battlefield here in about a year and 5 months' time, and they're going to be at each other's throats again.
No, you're right about that. And they got to start negotiations early. Next year they can't wait till the end, which is December 1st. But you're right. I mean, everybody's predicting Armageddon, the sports shut down. I don't think the players are going strike. I don't see that. And they just lost 2/3 of a paycheck. I don't see them losing another 1/3 of a paycheck next year. So, we'll see. At least now they know each other very well, what they've been through. And it may not be easier in the sense that, right now with the pandemic, they were just doing their negotiations through conference calls and Zoom calls. You need to be face-to-face, looking each other in the eyes, pounding your fist on the table, storming out, what have you. So I think that created a problem as well.
On the line is Radio.com Sports MLB insider Bob Nightingale. Insider calls are brought to you by the Dell Technologies Small Business Podference podcast series, which is available on Radio.com/Dell. And Bob, now that we have a format in place, we know what's going to at least look like, what the schedule is going to look like, at least in concept. But from the procedure standpoint, these health aspects and the health procedures that are now in front of the players, what have you been hearing from teams as far as how confident they are in making sure that the players are going to be safe through this whole thing?
Well, I mean, they're crossing their fingers and saying prayers, really. I mean, you just don't know. You see all these college football programs being shut down here. 16 positive tests in the NBA for 300 players. Baseball's going to have about 1,600 players, so you're going to have about 100 positive tests. Don't know. I mean, who knows when they can complete the season? Who knows if they even got a spring training? But they got to try.
Is there a particular threshold they want to avoid? Have you heard a number? Is there a drop dead number that's if we get this many, we can't continue?
No, there really isn't. Yeah, in the read the safety and the health protocol manual, the 101 pages. But yeah, never mentions that. So you're going to have, at the outset of the season, 30 players on the team in a 30-man taxi squad. So I would think it'd have to be, 25, 30 players, get sick before they would think about that. That's the reason the taxi squad. But there's no set number, except, I would think, realistically, the number would probably have to be around 30.
Bob, I look at some of the teams that might be advantageous, at least in this, and you and I talked about this last time you were on with us, and I think about the Braves, and I think about where they sit right now in a very competitive NL East, but their roster depth right now I think is well suited for the environment that we're walking into. How do you handicap where the Braves are having to play not only the AL East teams but the NL East teams, where I think they match up favorably?
Well, I feel sorry for the Braves, those teams, and the NL East and AL East, because it's by far the toughest region. That's the area to want to be. I mean, even, you know, with the Braves having to play, you know, Tampa Bay was a very good team. Yankees are a very good team. Toronto's up and coming. You know, Boston's been there, done that. So it can be very tough. We'll see. I don't think depth's going to come in a big play this year because 60 games don't need a whole lot of depth. So you got to play well at the outset. Granted, Atlanta's a very good team, but in 60 games, anything can happen.
Bob Nightingale joining us, not only from Radio.com, but also USA Today, MLB Insider, joining us here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. Willie P. in for John Chuckery here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I think I don't want to say death knell, but the worst nightmare for MLB is if a prominent player kind of decides to opt out. I know that's something that has been talked about in other sports, and there have been certain players that have done that. Probably nobody to the level that would be earth-shattering, at least in some of these other sports. I know that it probably has affected some teams, but how much is MLB kind of behind the scenes encouraging those who might be on the fence to, you know, play, quote-unquote, for the good of the game?
Yeah, I haven't heard, the union or the MLB lobbying any player, to tell you the truth. It's up to an individual. That being said, I don't see anybody opting out. If you have a real health concern, okay, people can understand that. But you can't do it strictly for finances. I think it would be your teammates, you'd alienate the fan base. You would ruin any endorsements and marketing chances you have. So, when it comes here, it's got to be within 72 hours. I think less than a handful. And I think that handful will be strictly because of health reasons.
Who is a team that you think this particular format benefits that it wouldn't have benefited them to play a full 162-game season? Who do you think this rises up more when it comes to teams playing in a 60-game sprint as opposed to the marathon we're used to?
Well, it helps the teams, the bad teams. It helps the teams that had no chance realistically to compete over 162 games. I'm looking at the San Francisco Giants. I don't think they had any chance at all for 162. But a veteran team like that, some aging players. So I like the teams who have veterans on them because you're not going to get worn out during the season. It's just going to be a deal where everybody has a chance. So that, the veterans usually get tired, mid-season and everything else. Now there's no reason to get tired. So it really benefits just teams that had no chance. Because I really believe that one or two teams, one or two flukes are going to make the postseason.
Bob Nightingale joining us, USA Today, and also Radio.com MLB Insider here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We talk about baseball's return. The players are back starting midweek next week. The games start in about 3 or 4 weeks' time. I'm almost wondering now, Bob, just because if we take the DH and put it over to the side and assume that that's going to be in place in perpetuity, which one of these new wrinkles when it comes to gameplay do you think has the most lasting staying power when you think about, the extra inning rule or some of these other procedural rules with the roster, the maybe stuff happening with the extra inning? Like, what do you think has a chance to possibly stick, even maybe a fully shortened season now for the rest of baseball's incoming future?
Well, I think the DH for sure. It's only in place for this year, not even next year. I think it stays around. I believe that. So I think that rule stays. I think next year we'll go back to the regular rules and extra innings and play it out. I think fans may say, you know what, we kind of like the shortened extra inning. As players have explained to me, even the purists, it's like if you look at the four major sports, baseball has the most boring overtime. when the ninth inning's over, fans have the exit. You hear the moaning and groaning in the broadcast booth, the press box with the writers and everything else. So it's become boring overtimes, and actually innings in baseball's case, in the sense that everybody just swings for the fences. So that's got a chance to stick around. The one rule I really do not like this year that was already implemented was a pitcher facing three batters, a minimum three batters. I think in this short spring and everything else, some of these pitchers won't be ready. So I could see reliever coming in a key situation, you know, walking, you know, three straight guys or walking a couple of guys and giving up a home run. I don't think it's fair now with a short season.
One last one for you, Bob, and this kind of speaks to something we talked about earlier, just looking at the game as a whole and looking at kind of how it's going to be consumed. How do you see baseball trying to take advantage of national TV windows? I know that a lot of those opportunities are dwindling because they're kind of late to the party when it seems like MLS and NBA brought up a lot of real estate. How will they try to get the game some eyeballs they wouldn't have ordinarily had with some national TV exposure?
Well, you know, what they want to do really was have broadcast enhancements, and what they were going to pay the players about $5,000 a piece if you were a mic during a game. And it'd just be for an inning or so, and, you know, or particularly the guys who can talk, you know, to each other during a game, like what happened with Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo last year, or last spring, I should say, during spring training. So that's gone. We'll see how much the players cooperate. You know, some will. But that's their chance, because it could be very dull with no fans at all, just a couple of camera angles. It's very important to keep the fans engaged. I mean, obviously, it's going to help that the games are worth, what, 2.7 times more than a regular season game because of the, you know, reduced schedule. But, you know, that would have really helped as far as the enhancements. So we'll see. We'll see if the fans get bored or the fans say, you know what, it's almost like an NFL season because these games mean so much.
Bob, we appreciate the time as always. I know that you've been diligent in trying to report on this. We're glad that we'll have some games to talk about here pretty soon, but thank you so much for the time as always.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you, Will.
That's Bob Nightingale joining us. Again, our radio.com sports MLB insider, brought to you by Dell Technologies Small Business Conference podcast series, available on radio.com/Dell. And, of course, he was on the radio.com, waitforit.com hotline, I should say. 404-741-0929. Do you think baseball missed out? About 25 minutes from now, I'm going to tell you why I think baseball really missed out because of one sport that has really captured the eyeballs of America. And it's had some things outside of its control that has forced that. But I think even without those things, they have certainly entered in an area where baseball could have possibly penetrated themselves. We'll do an NFL ground and pound next, including Malcolm Jenkins saying something that's rocked the football world. If you missed that, you'll hear it next. Willie P is in the building. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and radio.com.